Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
It's wonderful to see all your faces. How's the sound working so far? Okay. It's a little anxiety producing to give the talk, but it's a little comforting to see all your faces. We had a 100th birthday party for a Sangha member who actually passed away a couple weeks after the party, but she was in great shape for the party. And they wheeled her in early on, you know, one of the first people she was wheeling in, this situation was taken out and it was all chairs. And then after she sat down, slowly everybody came in, you know, all her friends and her kids and her grandkids. And then went through the whole thing, the dance, the songs, the speeches and the whole thing. And at the very end, they asked her if she wanted to say anything. And so they wheeled her up and she turned around, and that was the first time she saw who was in the room. And she just got this amazing look on her face. It was like one of those moments of just pure delight. Anyway, it's nice to see your faces this morning. This talk could be titled Back to Basics. So not any of the very relevant things people might be expecting me to talk about this morning. I think that many of us came to practice with a kind of a question like, is there another way to do this? Is there a way to do this? How do you do this? This meaning our human life. Our human life with its, you know, joys and sorrows and possibilities. Much is given to us and much is taken away. We may feel like human life is hard. We may feel like we came into adulthood in a sort of seat of the pants way, like chance encounters. You know, our parents did their best, but there were the chance encounters and chance lessons, chance experiences, and then here we are, and we're doing stuff. But we might feel like we don't know what we're doing or why we're doing it. So we might have a question like that, and. I think the Buddha's teaching is, yes, there is another way to do this. There is a way to do this, and how is the right question? I think this is what the Buddha's question was in a sense. And many ancestors after him down through history have had a question like that, questions like that. So, I mean, it's to find oneself in a lineage of people who had like a similar question to yours is really wonderful and comforting, I think, for me. And as you get to know the stories and the ancestors, it can feel like you're having a conversation across time with people. And I'm not saying Zen or Buddhism is the only way to answer these questions. But it is our question, and a lot of what our words and actions are about are our answers to that question. So, however, there's something tricky right out of the gate, because you try to come in and do this. You know, you try to do the meditation, you try to calm the mind. And, you know, so we bring the way we usually do things to this, and it just doesn't work. But we can't help that. We try to make it happen. We try to calm our mind. And it's not infrequent that you hear somebody say, oh, yeah, I tried meditation, but I couldn't do it. And I always think, darn, you were so close. Be because you can't do it. You can't calm the mind. It's not something you do like other things like cooking and eating and reading and writing. You learn to do them and then you do them. This is something different. There's a great Zen story about calming the mind. The student comes to the teacher. I'm hearing a funny sound, but is that okay for everybody else? It's like a tiny little something.
Sounds okay to me.
Okay, Blake, good. Okay, it's not a problem. Thanks, Blake. It's not a problem. So in this story, the student comes to the teacher and says something like, I can't calm my mind, I can't calm my mind. And the teacher says, bring me your mind and I will calm it for you. And the teacher goes away for days, months, or years. It's not told in the story. Finally comes back and says, I couldn't find my mind. And the teacher says, there, I've calmed your mind. So meditation is, yeah, it's something more like unlearning doing somehow. It's like we learn to open up a space for our breath. You know, we allow a space to open up, and in that space, we feel our breathing. And of course, not continuously, because thoughts crowd in. So then we allow space for the thoughts that are crowding in. And some thoughts might even be, I'm so bad at this, this isn't working, I can't do this, you know? So you allow space for those kinds of thoughts. And then with those kinds of thoughts come feelings, sometimes bad feelings. So then we open up space for bad feelings or feelings, whatever feelings, the feelings that are coming and going all the time. And as we keep doing this, you might even find you're touching like some kind of inner not okayness, you know, inside. And then open up a space for that part. And eventually you might find that you're residing in the space that's holding everything. Something more like that. Allowing a space to open up for what's happening inside and outside. A lot of the meditation that we experience nowadays, that people come here, you know, it used to be that people had never meditated when they first came to meditation instruction here, like 30 years ago or something. But now, when people come to meditation, almost everybody has had some experience of meditation. And when they come to instruction, they'll say, what's your experience with meditation? Almost everybody has had some experience. And a lot of the experience people have is what you might call guided meditation. That's where a person's voice, a person's voice is leading you through, you know, tune into your breathing, relax certain muscles of your body, whatever it is, many ways to do it. And that can be very comforting. And it's, you know, especially if you're upset or if you have some kind of, if you know you have some special trauma that you're dealing with is coming up, you know, sometimes guided meditation can be comforting. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I think I want to say our zazen, just sitting in silence and stillness, we can actually learn to trust ourselves. You might have to give it some time. You know, our path is written on our cells, so to speak. You can trust, you know, as you settle, you might hear that still small voice within, you know, and you learn to tune into that. And you learn to, you know, hear your deep inner prompting. So we can learn to trust ourselves. I want to say a few words about pain, about sitting with physical pain. We don't talk about it very much. I think partly because it's impossible to know what another person's experience is. And we don't want to say maybe too much, but I think it's okay to say something about pain. I remember, nowadays I'm sitting in a chair, so I don't quite get to the level of pain that I used to for 40 years. I remember a long sitting where I was, one of my first longer sittings, maybe my first longer sitting, probably. I just was looking around and I could not believe that the other people in the room could possibly be having anything like the experience of pain I was having. Like they just would not tolerate. That many people would not do that. And it made me feel even more alone. However, they are. I mean, often they are. Again, we don't know what another person's experiencing, but many, many, many of the other people are feeling that, a kind of pain, intense pain. And in the Zendo, we're actually the opposite of alone when we're here. And how we experience pain is probably going to evolve over time for each person. Part of the way to do it is to kind of figure out how to relax into it a little bit, open up space for it, gently. And you can map onto the, you can actually map onto the other people in the room, and everyone's effort to be sitting with that. Again, we don't know exactly what anybody else is experiencing, but we can generally know that a lot of people are sitting with pain. Sometimes I've, sat thinking, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this any longer. And then the bell rings and you get up and think, that wasn't so bad. Because, our lives are full of pain. Maybe, physical pain, emotional pain, psychic pain. It's not infrequent part of our lives. So to learn how to sit with pain and sort of see where you go, where you go when you're in pain, can be really valuable. Because, our physical pain kind of, I think, free associates us to our psychic pain often. So you have a little laboratory here where you can just be with yourself and what happens when you feel pain. I remember Sasheen, maybe halfway through my journey of practice, quite a way, not right at the beginning, but after just a few periods, I suddenly became aware of this part of myself, like you could say a little girl inside, who. So I had a lot of physical problems when I was a kid. I had a lot of physical discomfort, you could say. I had really bad allergies, including like runny sneezing, runny nose, blowing my nose all the time, and also a terribly itchy rash in my arms. And I was pigeon-toed, so I sort of got made fun of for that. And I also had like kind of intestinal cramps often in the morning before school. So I was just, there was a part of me that was kind of holding that. And, as I grew up, I learned to deal, as we all do, learn to deal with myself and my life and my body. But there was kind of like a little girl inside who was holding that and, holding the aloneness of that, the loneliness of that experience is kind of how I felt it. And so I just spent that sesshin sitting with that little girl or that feeling, listening, staying in touch, not getting merged, But really feeling her in my body, it was kind of like she'd been the water I was swimming in until this moment when I kind of got her in view somehow. And you know, I think you can have some metabolizing of pain through a process like that. I'm not saying it's the only way, but it's possible. You know, our parts are going to surface in their own time, I think. I believe when they're ready. Our parts are going to surface when they're ready. We don't so much go digging around for them, but they'll surface when they're ready. And hopefully you'll be ready for them. I wanted to bring up another somewhat taboo subject, enlightenment. Another reason many of us came to practice was for enlightenment. We wanted to be an enlightened person, a serene embodiment of peace, who always knows the appropriate response to what's happening inside and outside and other people. Or minimally, if not that, an enlightenment experience. Like what we call in Japanese a Satori or Kensho experience. Many of us have that, something like that in our minds when we come to practice. So of the two Zen schools that came to us from Japan, there's many, many schools of Buddhism, and Zen is among some of the Buddhist schools. And there's two main schools of Buddhism that came to us from Japan, Rinzai and Soto. And Berkeley Zen Center is a Soto Zen temple. And I don't know if I can speak for all of Rinzai, but I know that a lot of the Rinzai practice and centers and teachers that have come to us in the West place a high emphasis on having a Kensho experience. Like, it's really important to have a Kensho experience, and that's an effort you're making somehow to have that experience. And the teacher's like exhorting you and such. And in Soto Zen, not so much. In fact, our founder, our the Japanese teacher who brought Buddhism to us, our group in San Francisco and all the schools groups that have blossomed from that, really seemed to feel that it wasn't an important point to emphasize for us, for Westerners. What he seemed to say was, what he wanted to emphasize was no gaining idea, that we should come to practice with no gaining idea, not even enlightenment. And this kind of goes back to what I was singing at the beginning, where you can't do, you know, these things aren't things you can do or make happen, you know. And so what Suzuki Roshi was kind of saying is just let go of trying to make anything happen, including enlightenment. I have a little quote from him. The most important thing for Zen students is the way-seeking mind, our sincerity, or constant effort. Our constant effort, which will last forever. The most important point for us is to acquire the spirit of practicing Zen, or to realize your true nature, or to appease your inmost request. Without realizing your true nature, it is impossible to make peace. That is why we practice Zazen. Should I read that again? The most important thing for Zen students is the way-seeking mind, our sincerity, or constant effort, our constant effort which will last forever. The most important point for us is to acquire the spirit of practicing Zen, or to realize your true nature, or to appease your inmost request. Without realizing your true nature, it is impossible to make peace. That is why we practice Zazen. And so one sort of underlying idea behind all this talk of enlightenment. This is maybe the middle way between the two approaches, I don't know. Some sort of verification. It's about some sort of verification, mainly that we verify for ourselves the teaching. It's not just we take in the teaching through our eyes of study and our ears, hearing teachers talk, hearing people's talks. But then we try to put it into practice and we verify for ourselves whether it's true or not. Buddha said life is suffering. Check it out. Is life suffering or not? Everything that comes to you from this seat or from the teachings, you can verify it for yourself. The Buddha said, be a lamp unto yourself. He did not, there's no beliefs here. You don't have, we're not telling you you have to believe anything. We're telling you, the Buddha saying, here's what I saw when I got really quiet and I looked at my experience. Here's what I saw. And I think you will see that too if you do that. And, you know, you can be comforted to know that many, many people through history have done that, have verified it for themselves by putting it into practice. So it's not so much about idealizing enlightenment or an enlightenment experience. But just letting us know that many people have struggled with this, and this has been an answer for many people. Here's another Zen story. In this story, the student studied with diligently for many years with two different Zen teachers, one after the other. But he failed to answer his teacher's question, which was, what is the face of your parents before? Show me your original face before your parents were born. He wasn't able to answer that. And so he felt terrible, we assume. The feelings aren't in the story, but we can imagine. He felt terrible. Or maybe he just says, oh, fine. Okay, fine. I'll let go of that. Whichever. Maybe. But I'm saying he probably felt bad. But he didn't leave Zen. He just said, okay, I'm just going to go and take care of this shrine area of the temple. I'm just gonna sincerely do my best, I'm gonna let go of everything I've been trying to do here, diligently practicing for enlightenment, and I'm just gonna take care of this kind of untended part of the temple area. So then he's doing that, he's taking care of it, he's sweeping day after day after day, who knows for how long. And then one day, as he's sweeping, a little pebble flies up and hits some bamboo, and it goes, pock! And then he has this enlightenment experience. And I'm saying that the takeaway from that story is, it's gonna happen when you least expect it. So how about not expecting it? How about trying to spend more time not expecting it? In fact, let's spend all our time not expecting it. Okay, so I have plenty of time. I've thrown a lot at you, and I have a whole nother topic I wanted to bring up. I was going to see what time it is, and I think there's time, which is the Japanese chanting. You know, there was a period of time in our senior student group, the group that meets, you know, once a month for many years. There was a little bit of a movement to stop doing the Japanese chanting. As just being too off-putting, you know, like people can come, maybe they're willing to bow, try that, but that's just a bridge too far. I'm chanting in another language, I don't know what I'm saying. Okay, no. So there was a feeling, I can feel for that. As a response to that, we should just stop doing the Japanese chanting. It is true that you kind of just, it's just like kind of like suspension of disbelief, and you just have to settle in and immerse yourself in this, you know, strange, uncomfortable, weird practice. And, you know, so I just want to bring up the other side. What's enjoyable? What's good? What's helpful about our Japanese chanting? In the first place, we're not actually chanting in Japanese for the most part. We're chanting in this highly evolved over centuries version of Chinese and Japanese that's come to us as a kind of chanting language, you know, a language that's very good for chanting. It carries elements of Chinese and Japanese for sure. One of the great things about it is that we use the makugyo, this drum right up here, which you may or may not be able to see. It's really nice to be able to chant along with the drum. And in fact, to learn to play the drum is really great. And we do try to give people a chance pretty early on to learn how to play the drum. Actually, any of the instruments for service are really great for practice. You know, it's like not too loud, not too soft, not too fast, not too slow, being in harmony with everybody, and bringing something out of yourself to harmonize, you know. It's a beautiful thing. And, you know, when we chant together on one note or we're kind of merging our voices, that's kind of a way that we're kind of merging. So that feels beneficial. If you have another place in your life where you can chant or sing with a group of people along to a drum that ideally that you were doing from childhood, you know, yes, that probably, I think that feels more natural than coming in here. You know, we have to again get over this little bit of a hump of, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm just going to see what it feels like. Just see what it feels like and be with the other people, seeing what it feels like. You know, in some centers, they use the makugyo for the English chants. So that's kind of another option if we ever got to where we went over to this other side of giving up the Japanese. We could at least still have the makugyo with our English chants. And maybe eventually we'd evolve some kind of Sino-Japanese English chanting language. So there's a short chant that we do that I was thinking about just telling you what it means this morning. It's called the Enmei Juku Kanon Gyo. And it's a chant we chant 9 times, and we do it usually during a well-being service. One of the main times we do it is for well-being services. It's a chant calling forth the compassion of Kuan Yin or Kanon Kanzeon, and Meijuku Kanzeon. Kanzeon is the embodiment of compassion, the archetype or the bodhisattva of compassion. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. I'm just going to give you some pointers. So one early on, there's a line, Bu Po So En, Bu Po So En. And that means Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, affinity in the chanting language. I don't know if you told a Japanese person, what does Bu Po So En mean? I don't know. Maybe they would know that it means Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. Maybe they wouldn't. I don't know. Affinity with, you know, I'm aligned with Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. Bu Po So En. And then a little further in the chant, what's going on here? I'm having so much trouble with my robe lately. For a long time, I prided myself. That was probably my biggest mistake. I prided myself on how well my robe stayed on. find the chair is not, the chair does not help. So later in the chant, we say, Chonen Kanzeon, Bonen Kanzeon. Kanzeon, as I said, means the embodiment of compassion. So it's like the whole chant is like, compassion come by here. Compassion come be with me or with us. Chonen Kanzeon, Bonen Kanzeon. Cho means morning. Bo means evening, and nen means thought. Morning thoughts, kanzeon. Evening thoughts, kanzeon. In other words, ceaselessly, you know, without interruption, I am invoking the compassion of Kuan Yin. Cho nen kanzeon, bo nen kanzeon. And then the last two lines, Nen nen ju shing ki, nen nen fu ri shin. Oh, that seems really hard. Okay, we're never going to understand that, right? However, you can. Oh, right, I didn't tell you. I was supposed to tell you during that part about what nen means, too. Nen means thought moment. A thought moment is supposedly a 60th of a second. So like, you know how there's 60 minutes in an hour and 60 seconds in a minute, there's 60 thought moments, 60 nen in a second. That's how fast our mind is going all the time. So bo nen, morning thoughts, kanzeon, evening thoughts, kanzeon. And then nen nen ju shing ki, thought after thought. Nen nen means thought after thought. Ju shing ki means arise from the mind. Shin, as we many of us know, means mind. I'm not sure about the ju and the ki, but anyway, it means thought after thought arise in the mind. And then nen nen fu ri shin. Shin again, the mind. And fu means no. You know, like, you know, in the Heart Sutra, you might not have noticed this, but fu means no. And the Japanese version of the Heart Sutra is full of fu. I wrote it out a little bit here. Fu, sho, fu, metsu, fu, ku, fu, jo, fu, zo. Maybe you didn't even notice it went by so fast. That's no. No this, no that, no eyes, no ears, no nose, etc. So fu ri shin, ri means different. Fu ri shin, nen nen fu ri shin. Thought after thought are no different from mind. Which like right here at the end of this little chant for well-being is like basic Buddhism. Buddhism is there's nobody having thoughts. There's no mind having thoughts. Thoughts are the mind. The mind is the thoughts. So now you can listen to that one and at least you have some idea what it means. I think what I'm trying to say is, you know, give us a chance. This is for kind of for the newer people. Give this a chance. If you have the time and inclination, you'll see. Give it a chance. And thank you. Thank you so much for your listening. Again, it's wonderful to see your faces this morning. Any questions or comments? Yes, Greg?
I'll bring the mic up. Yeah. Then I have to hold the mic like a hot dog on an ice cream cone.
You can see the time here. I guess it's pretty close.
Thank you, Reverend. Lori, thank you very much for your talk.
Thank you.
I really liked it a lot. I particularly appreciated what you said about things surfacing in their own way, in their own time, and just allowing that to happen. This was a frequent theme of practice discussion in Doksan in Tassajara, especially in the summers when people are trying this on, and they're like, oh, these things are coming up, and often I don't like them. or having a mild freak out, you know, like, what? That's a part of me too. And what I think I noticed talking to many people about this phenomenon is that it happens when the body knows when it's ready. And to whatever extent you engage in this body-mind duality, you know, the mind is, your thinking mind is a little bit behind. Mm. No, I'm not ready. Yes, you are. The body is saying, yes, you are. And here it comes. And look, you didn't die. And it's okay. Mm-hmm. And then you can metabolize that and your practice matures and you have greater capacity and the whole thing works out pretty nicely overall.
Mm-hmm. However, just to bring up the other side, we've been talking about this a little bit in leadership. You can actually have a trauma that is, childhood trauma that is not going to work in this setting for you to deal with it. That happens to people. And now that we've been having, you know, meditation in this country for whatever, 50 years or something, there's people who can attest to that. Like, it did not work to have this come up during Zazen. And that's okay, you know, if you give it a try. You don't want to be, the idea is that you're not totally triggered. You kind of have it in view somehow, and you can kind of hold it and befriend it somehow. But sometimes it's just not possible for some people. So there's nothing wrong with you if that's you.
And the important thing is to go and talk to a teacher
good
or practice
point,
leader.
Good point.
Which Berkeley Zen Center has a deep bench of teachers and practice leaders, and you're not alone in this, you know. I think that's a very, very important point, and that we should encourage this culture of practice discussion. Mm-hmm. And that's how we grow as a Sangha. And lastly, I just wanted to say that Sojin Roshi said that enlightenment was a great advertising gimmick.
Yoni's behind you, Joe. And it might be that your practice leader tells you, actually, you need something more than this, and helps you find that. Yes, Yoni.
Thank you. Thank you for your talk. I find you so encouraging, so encouraging, and I find you enlightening. It's just like, I love your talk so much. I've been so distracted lately, like cannot stop my mind running. And Zazen, like I don't even try anymore to like return to my breath. It's just like, oh, I'm just here. Off to the races. And I want to know what you think about that.
Well, I think where I'm going with this is kind of the arc of your life, you know? Like you came and you settled and you got quiet and then you started a bunch of things out of that. I believe that you started some things out of that. And those are all new things. So like that's all the new things and the way they relate to the old things or whatever or what's coming up. So I think personally I would just see it as part of the arc of your practice. This under these conditions where you've introduced all these new elements, you know. That's just what your mind is doing. So just ride it out. That's my advice. You can ask more other people too, but ride the waves.
You have a questioner online.
Oh, okay. Yes, Jinan, you're going to unmute.
Thank you for the help with unmuting. sorry, I hear a little echo. Is that okay?
It's fine for us.
Okay. Thank you so much for your talk. It resonated quite strongly, and especially as a newcomer, felt I'm leaving this talk with a much better understanding of practice and of the tradition. So thank you, because that deepens it. And the first part of your talk about pain, that's partly my question, is, you know, I've lived most of my life, if not all, in quite a bit of pain and a lot of it physical. And that's partly what brought me to BZC and to practice. And it's a component of a broader aspect. So in this practice, speaking of holding pain, which is what I'm really trying to practice, can you expand more? I know it's very personal and for each one is different. I really captured the essence of expanding. Is there anything more you can say about holding pain, past and present?
That was a good question. Thank you. Yeah. Sort of, I mean, similar to the whole idea of trauma, I have heard, there's a longtime member here who has chronic pain, and I've heard that's like chronic pain is different. Chronic pain is just different. I think, I don't think those, the things that you do in Zazen to help you like soften towards the pain, I don't think those would be bad things. But again, it's just different. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with you that those things don't quite work or they don't quite, you know. But on the other hand, we're all gonna, I mean, almost everybody, unless you die suddenly, is gonna be there someday. And so it's good to, for us, you know, to learn how to sit with pain. And I don't think it would, I can't see how it would be wrong for you as long as you don't go to, I'm so bad at this, or this isn't working, or there's something wrong with me. You know, those are the popular grooves that our minds go to. At least you have, you know, if you're in the room with a bunch of people, at least you know everybody's is dealing with pain right now, you know, or something like that. Like, just however you can find to open your, you know, to have a heart open to it and a mind open to it and kindness, you know. Big mind is kind. Big mind is kind. Thank you. So, Mary, you got the...
I have one question here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure, sure, sure. Hi.
Hello. Hello. Okay, there we go. Hello.
Hi.
Thank you very much for your talk. Very helpful. I had a question on, like, the specifically Kensho enlightenment experience. When we do have that, what's your recommendation for how to not get steeped in it or how to not get sucked up by
That's
it?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
That's a really good question. I say, now, I have heard teachers say to people, let it go, don't hang on to it. That's a legitimate, teachers I know have told people that, I've heard from the people. However, I would say it's some kind of information. It's a moment in time for you. You know, just like when Megan turned around and saw all the faces, 50 people love me, you know. It's information, it's a moment. Wherever it is, you know, people say that it's, I haven't had that kind where it's about, I realized interdependence or something like that. I realized I was connected to everything, you know. It's something for you to put into practice, you know, bring in, incorporate into your life. I think it's a gift to incorporate. It's not just an advertising gimmick, you know. I think it's, and I also think that we minimize the small ones. We have this, we idealize this big thing, and oh, this must not be it, you know. Sometimes it's just, now I see what they meant, you know. But take it in, yeah, take it in and practice it.
There's another person online, Karen.
And then after that, Mary. Okay, Karen, hi.
Hi, Lori. I thank you so much for your beautiful talk. I love how you have the sort of combined wisdom and levity. It's just, it's an inspiration to
wisdom
my practice.
Wisdom
and levity.
Levity. Like
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And I just wanted to comment on the chanting. I didn't know all these details, specifically the Chinese-Japanese combination. And it's funny you mention that, because yesterday during the memorial service for Gail Scherer, the Mikugyo player, drummer, went really slow, and it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, I really was able to kind of feel the ancient wisdom. Mm-hmm. You know, there was just sort of an energy in the Zendo, mm-hmm. and it was because of the slow rhythmic pace. Mm-hmm. And I had not experienced that before.
Yeah, that's the instruction, is to do it slower.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the one time, like, there's a chant, we don't ever talk about what those words mean. That's just not part of our world. And I think that, you know, I had someone once ask me, my mom died and I need a mantra. You know, I need something, I want something, I don't know what it means. I mean, this is an inconceivable experience and I need something to match that, right? And so that's what that chant is that we do. Don't even think about what it means. It's the mantra of the mystery, the mantra of the mystery. Thank you. Hi, Mayor.
So seconding what Yoni said about your encouragement, thank you so much for your talk. This is a question I've asked before, but I really want to know your answer to it. And speaking as a person with one new knee and one old knee, what is the pain that you sit through and what is the pain you don't sit through?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that you, if you get up and it's gone, then you did okay. That's for sure okay. If you get up and it hurts, that's may not be okay. So that's what I always went by, you know. If you get up and, oh, that not so bad, you know. Or, your legs come back. You know, sometimes your legs go to sleep, but then they wake up without any problem. So I think it's kind of a dance. And I don't know the anatomy of getting the knee surgery. There's other people who've gotten that. I didn't know that you could go back to cross-legged with that. But we want to be careful. And for the other people, I want to say something to the other people who are still sitting cross-legged in half lotus or full lotus or quarter lotus. Keep doing hip openers, not just Zazen. Zazen is not enough of a hip opener. You need to keep doing your hip openers every day. And if you don't know what hip openers are, get a yoga teacher to tell you. I think they used to have on the Yoga Journal website how to grow a lotus, and it gives you a set of exercises. Do them if you want to keep sitting cross-legged and not wreck your knees. That's Spike.
I have a second request.
Okay.
Could we do one round of the Enme?
Sure. Can you do it? Greg, can you? But how can we do just one round? Should we do nine? What time is it? It's only do three. Thank you, Joe. A person in charge is a good thing. Okay. Enme juku kanon gyo kanzeyo namu butsu yo butsu uen yo butsu uen poso en jo raku ga jo chonen kanzeyon bonen kanzeyon nen nen ju shinki Furi shin kanze on namu butsu yo butsu uen yo butsu uen bu poso en jo raku ga jo chonen kanze on bonen kanze on nen nen ju shinki nen nen furi shin kanze on namu butsu yo butsu uen yo butsu uen bu poso en jo raku ga jo chonen kanze on kanze on nen nen ju shinki nen nen furi shin. What was that?
Are you going to dedicate the marriage?
With a deep desire for peace, we offer the merit of this chanting to the world and our country and climate change and all the things that I didn't mention today.
More questions?
more questions? It's 11:11. It's a good time. Any last question? Seems like we're done.
Things are numberless. I vow to awaken with them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Beings are numberless. I vow to awaken with them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Beings are numberless. I vow to awaken with them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless.
Surpassable.